started off another Lauren and Fritz podcast, this time in person.
In person, it just came together. It was my birthday weekend, and you called me the day before my birthday and said, what's going on?
Well, said, happy birthday, by the way, because I don't think
much.
I officially said that
thank
since you walked in the door.
Thank you. Thank
happy
you.
Birthday, Lauren.
Thank you.
So you're the big, you're going to be drinking age this year, Lauren, are you?
I am well past the drinking age at this point. I'm not quite halfway to Social Security, but I'm getting there.
Yeah.
I'm 29. I'm not that old.
Yeah, he's still not. It's not 30. Everyone says at 30, that's when you really start to feel old.
Well, everybody, I found ever since 21, everybody keeps telling me what a downhill slide I'm on, age-wise.
Really, I've had a 7-year spiral since the age of 21.
Yeah.
Every day is worse and worse. Hangovers are worse and worse. I can't, you know, I sit there and go, oh, God, do I really want the headache in the morning? I don't think I'll have this beer.
That's true.
So,
absolutely.
Well, that more pertains to liquor, really, not beer, but.
Yeah. Speaking of liquor. McCarty is here today with us, and
he had quite a bit
of whiskey last night.
Yep.
Is it at least good whiskey or did
nothing but
this man got a bar for the wedding?
No, it was after the wedding.
After the wedding, they got a bar, and this thing, it opens up, it has everything you need to make all of McCarty's favorite drinks.
Yeah. But I usually just drink straight whiskey, scotch.
That's what
hardcore,
he does.
Hardcore.
He's hardcore. That's how he rolls. He gets himself a glass of that, and he cues up Sorcerer's Apprentice, and that's the evening right there.
So I know that you are married now, McCarty. So this isn't. Don't take this the wrong way. But was it that big of a party that somehow a stripper found you last night? Because as we know, strippers find McCarty.
This is true.
No.
No strippers found you.
You didn't have to turn one down?
No,
okay.
No.
So it was a light evening then for McCarty.
It was.
Well, we have to keep in mind my bachelor party is happening at some point this year.
Yep.
Justin's setting that up. So a stripper will find you again this year.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah. So.
We've got cats.
We got cats all of us. Cat tried to find you right now, McCarty. Oh, my Lord. So we've got plenty of things to talk about because we haven't done a podcast in a little bit. So I will start, we can start talking about Record Time and how Record Time, the local record store around Metro Detroit, is going out of business. And Andrew, you feel guilt about this. That's
well, I can't
me.
Help not. Like, I feel like anything that I have to say about Record Time closing is just, you can just sit there and call me the biggest hypocrite because I work for Best Buy, who essentially is the person that shut down Record Time. Like, I work for the establishment that is the cause of the mom and pop record shop going out of business. And on top of that, you know, the way that the digital music scene's going, man.
Yeah.
I got myself an MP3 player. I'm with the times. I'm digitally downloading. I got Napster cards. I hate iTunes. I don't really go to iTunes, but
I don't really use iTunes. Yeah, I use Amazon MP3.
Although iTunes does have some exclusive Wolf Parade tracks. I'm going to have to bend for that.
That's how they get you. That's how they get you.
So I just feel like, I mean, and I'm, because the thing is, I'm bummed. Like, I don't want a local record store to close because I love going to local record stores, but I guess I haven't been there in years. So I kind of, I feel like everything that I have done, I have personally affected Record Time and Fred. Like, I mean, I'm just sitting there like, yeah, I've done nothing to help them or support them. I've literally done anything to help them close down. So, yeah, I just feel like I can't bitch about it because it's my own fault, literally. I mean, at least you guys, I mean, how often are you guys going to record stores?
Well,
last time I went was when you were here and what?
Last
summer?
Last March. Was it last year's record? Yeah, because we went to the record store day last year, which I believe was like March or April.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't live in Michigan anymore, so I can't really go to it. But, I mean, I would go to it every now and again.
Right.
When I had an income for that. And Lord knows, I think I bought the last two Sloan albums I bought at Record Time. Because where else was I going?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, so...
Yeah, when it was in Ferndale, it was
ideal.
Better.
It was ideal because
I don't head over to Roseville, so
it's the
if
times
I was over
though.
There,
it is the times. They are changing. I don't know. I mean, literally, I can sit here on my couch and get whatever the hell I want. Any movie or I mean, hell, Amber watched Black Swan at home before we went to the movie theater to actually see it. So it's, I don't know, just getting fat and lazy, and it's kind of nice, kind of depressing.
Well, yeah, because it's not good for commerce, but as far as, like, yeah, wanting to get a record, I mean, I actually had to, like, I when the new Kanye came out, I consciously decided I was not going to listen to any leaks. I was going to wait to the official release date and buy it because I wanted to hear it. Because that's the one problem with all this, though, is the quality of the a lot of the media can be very hit and miss. I downloaded a copy of The Other Guys last year, and the audio was good, but the video was washed out. So it's kind of a, you know, you run into a hit and miss area.
Well, I remember how excited, I mean, this is, God, I can't believe it. This, the thing that's popping into my head is I just remember Korn and Issues, probably the biggest one as a youngster growing up and being really excited to hear the new Korn album. And you didn't have a choice. You didn't have the internet to go and download Issues before it leaked. And like MTV would play a 30-second clip and you'd get all geeked up about it. And you'd be like, hell yeah. And like that's all you got until the record came out. And then you had to go to the store and buy it. And that was really a lot of fun. Like it made the album a lot. I mean, as we look back on it now, Issues, it wasn't that exciting now. But back then, it was the biggest thing ever because you had to wait for it. The anticipation.
Yeah. Well, now the anticipation isn't for the album release. It's for the album leak.
Yeah.
I mean, the new.
Yeah. Well, just today I got an email for I forget what service, but they're like new Go Team coming out like February 1st. And I was like, oh, it hasn't come out yet? Because I've been listening to it for the past month.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm continually shocked to see these, like, pre-order this album that I've already listened to for months now.
Yeah, well, that's the thing that really surprises me is sometimes the space between when the album leaks and when it's actually coming out. And I'm always kind of surprised, like, really? You're going to wait that long? The one that always, the biggest, in recent memory was, I believe, the last Phoenix record came out in May of 2009, but leaked in, like, February.
Wow.
And for some reason, they just... The new Deftones record last year.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
There was at least 2.5 months between release date and leak.
Yeah, well, because this shit's leaking in, like, before it's mixed form. Right. It's just... As soon as it's recorded, it's getting out there.
Well, yeah. The way to go, like, with Duran Duran, I didn't... I'm not sure, did anyone know about it before it came out?
I didn't... It just showed up on a torrent
because,
site.
I think it showed up when it was released on iTunes. Mm-hmm. And it's not the full, like, album because they're going to release that with more tracks in February, like physical media.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's, like, the way to go. When you're done with a bunch of tracks, release it digitally and then...
I think that's what they're trying to do. Like, in the case of the Deftones, the leaked version of that Deftones album, if you listen to the retail release, there's major differences in them because it's not mixed properly. You know what I mean? So as far as they're concerned, like, they released it when it was properly released. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think they wasted any time in the Deftones case. It just, as soon as it was recorded on a tape, any form of it, it seemed like it just get out there, you know?
Well,
like,
I mean, that's the thing I noticed with the Kanye leaks versus the actual album is the production is a lot different on the actual Kanye record for the better. He amps up and everything has a much bigger sound. I mean, the songs are already big sound.
But I think the main problem is, though, is even if you've heard a shitty version of it, you still heard the songs.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it's less like I remember I was sitting here for a while. I really watch Top Gear. It's the BBC show. And I was always sitting there going, well, I torrent it, and it's technically illegal. And I'm sitting there going, well, you know, they don't release it on DVD here in the States. And then Top Gear BBC comes out on DVD here in the States, and I go, yeah, it's got it's the edit. It doesn't have the full interview. I'm not going to buy it. So you just keep coming up with excuses as to why not to go buy shit. But I don't know.
I think you'll get over it.
Yeah, I will. It's just now I'm all sentimental and I don't know. Because what was that? What was the record store I used to go to growing up? It was Rockabilly's.
That's still there.
Yeah, Rockabilly. Well, it's kind of dilapidated and Billy doesn't own it anymore. It's a new owner too. Last time I went in there, that's where I got my record of, the plumbing and Arthur Godfrey speaks about the plumbing industry. That's where I got that vinyl from. It's a fantastic find of Arthur Godfrey literally talking about the plumbing industry.
All right.
That's
a hot new track on the streets.
But you know, you spend all day in there and then the used, there's still a market for used.
Yeah.
Although Amazon is taking care of that as well.
Amazon, let me tell you, I mean, everything you need, it's on there. And now they're even, Amazon's even sponsoring, or at least including some of their resellers under their shipping thing, so you don't have to worry about that. Because
nice.
I used to think they used to drive me crazy, is you know, I want to get all these things, but none of them are considered under their shipping, their super saver shipping. Hmm. So, which I'm sure everyone's like, Lauren, talk more about Amazon shipping costs.
we gotta stop sounding like old men and discussing how we hate that.
Man.
Oh, the digital. You already got the internet on the cell phones now.
Oh, man, checking the email.
Well, let's move on. I guess we got more movies than music, so let's start off with movies.
Okay.
Something that we have all seen, Black Swan.
Black Swan, baller, awesome.
My movie of the year.
McCarty's movie of the year.
I don't know if I'd go movie. It's probably got to be movie of the year because I can't think of any other front runners. But I just sat there and I reluctantly went to see the movie because I was sitting there going, "Oh, it's it's about ballet, and I'm sure she gets all crazy at the end." But I watched that movie and I went, "That bitch went crazy at the end." The first thing I got out is one of my best friends, Joe. You know, he's all into crazy, you know, crazy stuff like that. And I was like, dude, this would be the perfect movie for you. There's lesbian action in it. Mm-hmm. There's crazy murder scenes. There's all sorts of this. It blew me away because I thought it was just going to be this watered down, this ballet girl going nuts under pressure. But man, did she go nuts!
That's not how
Aronofsky rolls.
No, Aaron. This firmly puts it that Darren Aronofsky has no sense of restraint, and he goes ham, hard as a motherfucker.
Yeah.
On this. Absolutely, that is the only way he goes. Because I mean, I watched that and I said, man, this makes The Wrestler seem like his sellout movie.
Right.
Yes. You know? I like that a guy made a movie where people were stapling each other. And that's his like safe movie for the kids. Because Black Swan, Pie, Requiem for a Dream, The Fountain. Am I missing
Balls
anything?
Out.
Balls out. Yeah.
You know what? I probably would have to. It also did the main thing, too, where after I left the movie theater, I kept thinking about it over and over again because it does mess with your head a lot, mm-hmm. too. You're sitting there going, well, what's real? What's not real? Mm-hmm. Amber kept going, well, what did you think about it? And I said, I don't know. I don't know if I even understand what the hell happened. Did this happen or no? Because did this really. I don't know what's going on. That was just, yeah.
It's a mindfuck movie in the best way possible.
Yeah.
Because Lord knows people have called movies mindfuck movies, and then you see it, and you're just like, you just needed to think about
right.
it for a minute. But this one was truly a mindfuck movie because it never stops to make sure you're caught up. It just moves. And it never stops to delineate, like, you know, what is fantasy, what is real. It just kind of assumes that you can figure it all out for yourself. And I appreciate that. I appreciate the fact that Darren Aronofsky does not feel the need to hold my hand.
I feel bad that I have to say this now, but I would probably say the best way to do it would to be go in blindly the way that I did, not expecting anything
right.
after you've just heard that. But it really is like, it just blew me away because I really did not want to go see that movie. I was like all cranky, but there was really nothing else in the movie theater to go see.
No. Yeah, we should start a new rating system, and I would say the highest rating you can give a movie is balls out.
Yep.
And the lowest rating you can give it is balls list.
Okay.
That's
balls
good.
Out or balls list.
There you go. Because nope. our last rating system we attempted to come up with turned out to be the Hustler porno rating system. We just didn't
well,
know
it still
at the
involves
time.
Male genitalia,
yeah,
so you cannot get away from that.
Oh man, that's our issue here, clearly. So I will give Black Swan the rating of balls out. McCarty?
Balls out. Out.
Definitely balls out. Definitely.
Three balls out.
Three. Oh, God. There's three of us sitting on the same couch.
Oh, Lord. All right.
Maybe it'll become less gay in time.
Maybe. Well, we had that wonderful conversation with your wife before the podcast about who is and isn't gay in Hollywood.
I wish you guys...
You know what? Let's talk about that real quick.
Are we just going to go balls out and discuss
this? We're
going
to talk about this. We're going to talk about this. So people that are rumored to be gay, and by the way, we want to say it doesn't matter if you are or you aren't. Whoever we really think, though, you really should be honest with yourself. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So right off the bat, your favorite, John Travolta. as Amber said, I think we can say this.
I mean, John Travolta is a little past suspicion based on the fact that there is a photograph of him kissing another man.
Mm-hmm.
And not a, hey, how you doing kiss type foreign deal. It's a he's on that runway. Yeah. So, I mean, and that's not also too surprising. I mean,
no.
Welcome back, Cotter. He's Saturday
he was,
Night
he
Fever.
He was under homo suspicion for Welcome Back, Cotter.
I'm gonna go all the way back.
I would say when he danced in a Leather Daddy outfit on Ellen while promoting Wild Hogs, I remember thinking, all right, that's pretty much it. In a do-rag, nonetheless, McCarty.
See, yeah. And this is another thing as well. I had no idea that that happened, and you just told me that, and I'm not surprised.
Me neither.
So, definitely. But the Will Smith one, really, that one's kind of... Will Smith gay? Is he?
McCarty?
Yes.
All right.
I mean, his kid's got a rap career already. I mean,
I don't even know what to do with that information. She just kind of dropped it on us and kind of like a, Will Smith's gay, deal with it. Boom. And all of us were like, okay.
That's the one I don't believe just because of, listen to how clean, listen, his rap is so bad. I mean, like, when you listen to, like, Parents Just Don't Understand, maybe that's what he was talking about.
Parents just don't understand I'm gay.
Yes. It was the 80s. Times were different.
Oh, man.
AIDS was scary back then,
Because AIDS not scary now. No. At all. No.
Magic Johnson.
It's an internet joke now.
It's an internet joke
yeah,
now.
Yeah, that's
everybody
all it is.
Everybody AIDS face. All right. Leonardo DiCaprio.
You gotta be. We almost lost Leo a couple weeks ago. You gotta be. He almost had that plane crash. Hate to start.
Hey, all right. Okay.
I don't know. He could. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we were going on. We were listing so many people that it was like who wasn't gay. We're trying to list who wasn't gay.
We can all
Hollywood.
Confirm who is definitely not gay. Gerard Butler.
Oh, Gerard Butler. Okay, I thought we were going to go with our number one, which was
John Mayer.
John Mayer is definitely not gay.
So John Mayer and Gerard Butler, which we cannot discuss anything about.
How we know this. Well,
our personal
Mayer,
stories
know, but, yeah.
about Gerard Butler, Michigan State, and, You got to take the train up there,
exactly.
That's what happens. But right. We cannot talk about that because it's personal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, personal to Gerard Butler.
Yes.
So basically, the two straightest men in Hollywood are John Mayer
and you know
and
what?
Gerard Butler.
And the two stories that we know about Gerard Butler and John Mayer is that they fuck a lot of women. A lot of women.
That'll usually put that homo suspicion thing to rest.
And but yeah, and the fact that they are and that no one else is, that's also what's putting everyone else under homo suspicion. Because if Gerard Butler and let's face it, John Mayer, I never really considered to be up there as far as like a sex symbol when he first came out. I remember, I don't remember him being like, oh, he's a dreamy guy.
Watch the video for No Such Thing. There are these shots of the girls in the audience, and you can tell they're just like, oh, my God, this guy.
Well, he did it with his voice. There's no, like, is there John Mayer shirtless pics of him, like, ripped and everything like that? I mean,
he's got a sleeve tattoo. That's all I know.
Oh, does he? I don't even know that. Sleeve.
Well, he got a couple weird squares on his arm. And then suddenly one day he had a sleeve, but his music still sounded the exact same. So there's no correlation between sleeve tattoos and the hardness of your music.
So, John Mayer, you got to admit, is probably pretty average in terms of looks. He's not, but it's his music that gets to you. You know what I mean? It's one
is,
of those
is
like
it his music that gets to you, McCarty? McCarty has been adamantly anti John Mayer since.
Yeah.
Who does like John Mayer's music besides women?
Me?
You actually...
I like his first two albums a lot.
First two albums...
I like his first two albums a lot.
Is that before he started going all bluesy and
yes.
jazzy?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
The moment he did that, like, he lost me on his third record and his fourth record, like, no one
when he's
was
like, hey, guess what? Eric Clapton's too old. I'm filling his place.
Yeah, no, when he was, his songs had this nice sincerity to him. He's one of those people that got ruined by being famous. Because his first record had, like, I mean, obviously, had like, the Bodies of Wonderland song, which I don't listen to that one. But there's, like, this kind of nice sincerity, this nice breezy tone to it that I can enjoy. But once he starts to, you know, start looking at his own belly button and looking up his own ass, I mean, that's what...
Well, now you have Jason Mraz as the new John Mayer.
Oh, that guy's... Well, you know, the thing with Jason Mraz, he came out the same time as John Mayer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's been around for a long time.
But he didn't really get big until...
Yeah, and he always was looked at like a copy of John Mayer, yeah. And then John Mayer started going...
As if John Mayer was an originator. White guy with a guitar, never heard of it. No, but John Mayer at least doesn't scat, which is something that Jason Mraz loves to do. Skibbity bop boop. You know? And
I listen to Soul Coffin. I can't trash that scat.
The only people who are allowed to scat, okay, I guess Soul Coffin and David Lee Roth.
Skibbity bop diddy bop.
Exactly. All right.
I guess Korn does it as well, but yeah, that's getting to the...
In a sense, yes.
In a sense. Yeah. In a way. Moving on. So there, of course, we've talked about one of our first early podcasts. We talked about the greatest bad movie of all time, The Room.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And now there is a new contender for the new best worst movie, and that is M. Night Shyamalan's The Happening. Yeah.
I think that's a pretty bold statement because I still don't think we're going to ever be worse than The Room. Like, I think that by being saying that you're second worst to The Room still can mean that you're a really freaking bad movie, because The Room is just that bad.
The Room is that bad. The Room is The Room is super bad.
Because The Room is trying really hard. That's what I feel. Even though I know Tommy Wiseau says he's not. And by the way, I play a lot of PlayStation, Call of Duty. It's my drug of choice. And let me just tell you, the Tommy Wiseau screen names on PlayStation Network,
really? There's
more and more every single day, and it's quite funny. But anyways, back to The Happening.
Well, the thing with The Happening is...
Well, wait a minute. Is The Happening... No, is that the one where everyone kills themselves?
Yes. Yep.
Oh, I did see the beginning of that movie. Okay, we can talk now.
Okay. The alarming thing about it is that The Room will always be the worst because everything went wrong with The Room.
Yeah.
Across the board.
There's nothing that went right.
There are shots in The Happening that are in focus.
You're my favorite customer. I love you.
Yes, that are interesting panning shots, you know, that work. But the movie is ill-conceived from the beginning.
Yeah.
And M. Night Shyamalan's decision of how to direct everyone and how they're supposed to act is just one mistake after another. Starting right off the bat with my favorite scene in the movie, which is Mark Wahlberg talking to his classroom, in which he says, if I want to call it a phony tone of voice or just an overly sincere to the point of phoniness tone of voice, where basically the direction seemed to be, I want you to be the cool teacher and I want you to be engaging your students. And Mark Wahlberg just took that too far, so that the line comes out, did you guys read this story about the bees?
Because it's in elementary school, correct? If I remember.
No, it's in high school.
Oh, is it high school? Okay.
High school.
Yeah, okay, maybe I don't remember.
So that's the other thing, is he's talking to a bunch of high school students as if they're children. And that actually, now that I think about it, when the scene when the principal comes in and he does this really awkward thing where he's like, oh, it's
like
the
hiding
evil
from the principal,
hiding from
yeah.
the principal and turning the lights off. I'm like, these are like 16 and 17 year old kids. They really don't give a shit.
Yeah.
And but Mark Wahlberg he has so many scenes in the movie that are just very stunted.
Well,
can
we go back again, since you guys are my movie guys here?
Yeah.
What has Mark Wahlberg done that's been exciting, besides it wasn't
The Departed.
The Departed, yeah.
Okay.
Because
every time I think of
Boogie Nights.
Boogie Nights, that doesn't count. That's an exception. I'll count
that. Why
does
that not count?
Well, because it's an exception. It's actually a good one with him. But I always thought everything he's done is pretty vanilla. Like, where he fills in, you know, when Matt Damon's not available, he's right there to fill in the role. And he does a pretty good job on pretty good movies.
Well,
you know,
have you seen The Departed?
No.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Dude's fire.
He's the best part of the
Departed.
Okay.
He is every scene he's in, he's just murders. I mean, he should have. Who won the Academy Award that year? Alan Arkin?
Probably. Yeah.
Alan Arkin won, but it could have gone to Wahlberg because the dude is. Watch The Departed.
Okay.
You will have a whole new opinion.
Then I'll shut up.
Because dudes, there's this scene with him and Alec Baldwin where they just like berate each other, and then he walks out of the room and Alec Baldwin's like, good guy.
Well, I think we can all agree at least M. Night Shyamalan does nothing but vanilla movies.
I think we were talking about this last night. Basically, somewhere along the line, he bought into his own hype, and now all of his stuff has this overwrought self-importance to it that is unearned.
I just feel like he always is like, it's stuff that, like, let's say a 10-year-old would find scary. Where, like, if you, like, went to a 10-year-old and go, what would make a scary movie? And he would go, if there was, like, something under your bed. And then Emily Chamberlain's like, yes, let's go with it. And then he would
Shyamalan's
go,
bed.
Yeah. And then it would be like, what else is scary? Aliens. Yes, there we go. A movie, you know. I just the douchiest book, because I the only reason why I think about this is because I had ex-girlfriends, and one in particular, and she goes, oh my god, you got, what's that movie with the stupid alien in it?
Signs.
Yeah. Okay. And she's like, you got, it's the scariest fucking thing ever, right? She's like, you got to watch this, it just creeps me out every single time. And I watch it, and she was referring to the one scene where the alien just goes and then walks over the corridor. And she treated that scene like it was, like, she closed her eyes. Like, that was, like, that was terrifying to her. Also, the scariest movie that she ever saw before that was his other movie, The Village, which is not scary
at all.
So that's why I think it's like horror movies for children. But for some reason, he thinks adults like it as well. But I don't know. Anyway.
Well, The Happening, there's nothing scary in The Happening.
No.
There's some interesting suicide scenes in the beginning, I must say.
The suicide scenes, I think they're terrible.
Yeah, they're really watered down.
They're really watered down, like, for a movie.
I mean, it cuts away every single last second. Yeah.
And, like, what was...
But, like, the one with the leopards.
Oh.
The leopards?
Or the cougars.
The cougars rip this guy's arms off.
Yeah, there's, like, the one part where there's a bunch of... There's a crowd of people. And
we're talking about the Jersey Shore? What? Cougars?
right. No, there's... Oh, that
Desperate Housewives was supposed to be the joke. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, I messed that up. Anyways.
But yeah. There's a video that someone finds on their iPhone of a zookeeper, like, egging on the cougars to rip off his arms. And it's just... ridiculous.
It's so fake looking.
Because you can tell, like, you can really tell that this guy just has his arms to his side, and then he just has these fake arms that the cats are just ripping off, and he's just standing there.
God, I really...
As they're ripping
them. Because I remember we popped the movie in. I remember seeing some suicides, and then on the board of sleep, I remember turning it off probably about a half hour into the movie. So I guess I thought I remembered more of the movie than I did. But no, I literally turned that shit right off. Couldn't even do it.
There are long stretches where characters are in just together in a room, and everyone looks concerned as they're crowded around a television or a cell phone or something. And I don't know. I mean, the thing is that when we watched it, it was like, oh, this is super bad. And, like, when we watched it last night, it was kind of painful for me. Well, versus The Room... When I watch The Room, I get excited. I get joyous because it's so bad. I love it. It gives me so much happiness.
Yeah,
and
so bad it's good.
It's just, I don't know. It's just
different,
like,
for me.
It's different for you.
Yeah, because the first time I watched it was Thursday, and then I watched it again last night, and I feel like I could watch it again tonight and get just as much enjoyment out of it.
Though we're not watching it.
Oh.
We're playing Def Jam Rap Star tonight.
Oh, yes.
So... So it definitely, I can see the appeal of it being the new bad movie. It definitely, if you have some drinks in you, I mean, it is shocking to see it. It went to a theater and was like a movie that people paid
now
to
for
see.
Not watching M. Night Shyamalan movies. Cause I saw Signs, I saw The Village, and that was pretty much all I needed to see.
Six Sense?
You know, I did see The Sixth Sense.
Unbreakable.
No, never saw Unbreakable.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Unbreakable.
But, where was I going with this one? I'm more curious because as far as M. Night Shyamalan's reputation goes, I know Sixth Sense was obviously actually a good movie. I at the time I thought it was good. It had a good twist ending to it.
I liked Sixth Sense. I think Sixth Sense stands out.
So but anyways, like, and then I remember like, oh, The Village, like, oh, some people liked it, some people hated it. Yeah. And then you got down to The Departed, where it was again really not a lot of people liked it, but
The Happening.
There we go.
And don't skip Lady in the Water.
But I was gonna say Lady in the Water I thought had a worse reputation than The Happening did as far as critical acclaim, and then also the Devil movie as well, the new one that he just did.
Right. Well, Devil is
did he just write it?
Oh, okay. Yeah. I didn't, okay.
He produced it, maybe it was a story idea. Yeah, I think, but he didn't write the script or direct it.
Yeah. Okay.
But
yeah, Lady in the Water I thought was worse received than The Happening.
Lady in the Water is worst received, but I think that one, it came out and people didn't see it. People who did see it said it was bad, and it just kind of went away.
Yeah, I mean, I watched it, but I don't remember anything from it, and I didn't bring anything away. Whereas The Happening, I find
much more memorable.
Amazing.
So it's unoffensively bad, whereas The Happening is offensively bad.
Right. It was like, I guess the acting just didn't stick out as being horrible in Lady of the Lake, or whatever.
I'm going to have to watch that now. That, well, I mean, maybe I shouldn't watch it after you guys are like, oh, this smells like shit. Here, smell this.
It's kind of, that's kind of the feeling.
I know better than that.
I don't know. It's not. It's not something that I'm like, I was excited for you to watch it, McCarty, when you said you're going to, like, okay, this is someone who will definitely appreciate it. Because we watched it. I watched it with Rachel and our friend Justin over Thanksgiving. And, you know, it's deliriously bad at moments. And then there are other moments where you're just kind of like, this is almost over, right? It's almost over. So, yeah. But if you've, we also did compare it to, what was it, Birdemic, which I don't know if we talked about.
Birdemic?
Yeah.
It's first I've heard.
It is a really, really bad movie that clearly was, unlike The Room, where The Room was somebody, you said, you know, trying really hard.
Mm-hmm. Professional
still
crew people worked that movie.
Yeah, Birdemic was pretty much shot on a camcorder. You can, actors aren't mic'd. You can literally see a guy standing there waiting for his cue to then start moving. The special effects are the worst special effects you've ever seen. And you can tell, though, like, after the fact, you realize there are some shots in it that tip you off. Oh, this guy was trying to make a bad movie.
Yeah.
Like, the whole point behind this was,
like, he was like, hey, stand here and shot, and then I'll cue you.
Yes, exactly.
So that I can get notoriety.
Mm-hmm. And
giant shark versus mega whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
People will buy it.
And so after the fact, you realize, oh, okay. And that makes it less endearing.
Yeah. I mean, with that movie, I can't even watch it just because of the production values.
Yeah.
And, like, there's this one scene where they're at a beach and there's just this scientist that's there and he's going to explain the whole movie, like, what's happening. But half the time you can't hear him because of the wind. Like, the wind is blowing so much because they're on the beach and they're using terrible equipment that you can't even hear what this guy's saying.
Yeah. And I guess you could say with The Happening, M. Night Shyamalan was sincere.
Yes.
He thinks he's making strong point about the environment.
Yeah.
Because it is. Because what was it? We watched it with our friend.
Wait, there's a message to the movie?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
It is a big message.
It's an eco. Is it eco-terrorism? I don't know what eco-terrorism
is. Yeah, that's what she said.
She called it. Basically, at the end of the movie, our friend Amber goes, wait a minute. This is a fucking eco-terrorism movie? And we're like, yeah. She's like, fuck you guys for making me watch this. We're like, oh, we thought you knew.
Amber's working on a green movie set, and they got to have, like, their refillable water bottles and, like, all this stuff, and they can't have any trash or anything like that. And she didn't tell me about it for a couple of days because she knew how pissed I'd be about it. Not that I don't want to save and protect the environment, but God damn it, you know, I don't know, just douchebags like that that are all way too into it piss me off.
Okay, so that's The Happening.
Good movie, though? Do we have a good movie on the list?
Do we have a good movie? Well, we can talk about The Sorcerer's Apprentice, that just came out on DVD recently?
Yeah, recently.
Fairly recently. Came out this summer, flopped. No. Not a big flop, medium flop.
No, Sorcerer's, that was Nicolas Cage, correct?
Nicolas Cage, okay. Jay Baruchel.
And Alfred Molina.
Alfred Molina.
Which it got swept up between Harry Potter, Percy Jackson, and the Olympians. The Sorcerer's Apprentice, to me, they all seemed interchangeable as to which one it was. And then the Nicolas Cage one would probably lose out because it looked the most like National Treasure, but with a slightly different plot. At least that's what I saw from the commercials.
All right. Well, I mean, admittedly,
I mean, same director.
Same director. I liked the trailers. The trailers worked for me a lot better. When the reviews came out, though, they were really lukewarm.
Mm-hmm.
It was a summer where I didn't have a ton of money to throw around, and it wasn't a movie Rachel wanted to see, so I skipped it. And I assume you skipped it for pretty much the same reason.
Yeah.
So, but it definitely, it was a movie that I knew I'll probably rent it at some point. Mm-hmm. So he rented it, raved.
I loved it.
Loved it.
Yeah.
Gotta see.
It's a Disney movie, right? Isn't it?
It is a Disney movie, but it is heavy action and really only has a little bit really for kids. And
well, I mean, a Disney movie isn't a bad thing except for Tron.
but no, it doesn't. It didn't really.
It doesn't. It doesn't play to kids.
It doesn't
really
play to kids at all. It really is much more violent than I expected, but in a really good way.
And I mean, it definitely helps with Jay Baruchel being, you know, the kid of the movie.
Yeah, like you get a scene in the beginning where his character is 10 years old or something.
Right.
Then the movie jumps 10 years.
Yeah.
And now he's in college. And that works because I was like, man, I wouldn't want to follow around Nicolas Cage and some kid the whole movie.
Right.
But it just has a lot of really good action in it.
And the impressive thing is there's so much practical special effects, like a lot of like fireballs and like a lot of fire because they're magicians, of course. And it's all like real because if I watch special features and
they actually had fireballs, like
there's a lot of Hadoukens in this movie.
Yeah,
that's how they
which
fight.
I love.
That's how they fight primarily. Is that there's a really great shot where Nicolas Cage says, "Our main form of combat is the pulse bolt," and then he fucking Hadoukens this guy, and I'm like, okay.
And like when people get hit, they get pulled by lines, and it's a lot better than what it was in like X-Men and stuff like that. I mean, just like people flying around, and it's impressive.
It's very impressive.
Good enough to watch the special features. You know what I mean?
The action is very visceral. It doesn't have that phony CGI rubberiness.
Yeah. And when there is CGI, it looks good. Like the dragon.
There's a dragon sequence. I texted him. I was like, I'm watching the dragon sequence balling.
Yeah.
The dragon sequence in that movie is my favorite scene in the sequence in the movie because this giant dragon just appears and starts chasing people and just wrecking shit.
Yeah, and it looks good.
It looks really good.
We're not used to that.
No, because I think what it is that, you see so much special effects in movies and you're like, oh, that's obviously fake. That's obviously green screen. But the special effects in Sorcerer's Apprentice are top notch.
A lot of like, I hate to say that real quick though, like over the last 2 years, I felt like a lot of it is going. I've been seeing these same special effects for years now. Like, we're not going past this now. Like, where is there going to be the next leap forward? But anyway, so apparently it's in the Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Sorcerer's Apprentice, the special effects team brought it in that movie. That said, the script is about two drafts away from me caring about any of the characters. I didn't care about any of them. And that was, a bit of a detriment because I thought, man, you know, I would really enjoy this movie a lot more if I really cared about the plight of anybody. But I never really felt the stakes were high enough. I felt that there was definitely a decision that because they were still making a Disney movie, even when characters say things like, I'm going to kill you, it didn't have the weight of someone may die right now. Mm-hmm. It didn't really have that feeling to it. Also, there's a car chase in it. And I don't know, when you're dealing with people who are magicians and magic and the limitless abilities of magic, and then we have a car chase.
Can they fly?
No, it doesn't fly.
Nobody flies, but...
Okay. So I was going to say, if you're in a car chase and you can fly, that's just stupid.
Right.
Well, I felt that there was a bit of... Alfred Molina is really able to get around real easy, and then all of a sudden he gets in a car and he's like, turn left, turn right. And then there also is the shot, which is in every movie, where they're chasing somebody and then they turn the corner and there's a million taxis because it's New York City. And I mean, I've already seen that move. That was in Men in Black. I feel like that I've seen that in so many movies.
Maybe one of them is the cash cab.
But the car chase isn't.
But the car chase at the same time is well done.
Yeah.
And like I said, it fits. I mean, the CGI is still really good. And there are some, you know, neat spells as far as, you know, the mirror trick. They throw you in a mirror.
And you're like in the reverse world.
Yeah, that's kind of neat. But I didn't really care about any of the characters, like I said. But it moves briskly. This is something you'll enjoy, Fritz. There is a character in the movie that is the love interest of Jay Baruchel. And she is a college DJ.
Mm-hmm. wait, spinning records DJ or radio DJ?
Radio DJ.
Okay.
And so he listens to her show, and he says, I didn't realize, you know, I didn't recognize any of the music you played, so that's how I knew it was good. But then you hear her show, and she's playing like a One Republic song.
Yeah.
Yeah, that obscure One Republic.
And I said, Jerry Bruckheimer couldn't spring for like an actual indie track by indie band, like even a Vampire Weekend song or something. Right. I mean, even like a mainstream indie, you know, Arcade Fire. Unless they were approached by them and they said, "No, you cannot use our song in The Sorcerer's Apprentice. Right? Yeah. You have too much integrity." And then
there's
got to
be one indie band
One
out there.
Republic.
Yeah, there's got to be one indie band getting that Disney money. You know, right. I would have done it. Shit, I'll cut a track for you.
Yeah,
damn.
Yeah. So that kind of cracked me up. But I did have to admit they didn't. There was only one scene where they had like a woman in peril being used as a hostage.
Yeah, right.
And that wasn't what the
and it wasn't like the end of the movie.
It wasn't the end of the movie. I mean, it's. I don't want to like lowball and be, you know, giving this movie more credit than it's worth, but it was an entertaining film and definitely looked better than what was the other one, Prince of Persia or whatever.
See, right. I'm getting a lot of lukewarm. Like I'm hearing visually it's awesome,
yes.
But everything else is.
Well,
yes.
No, I mean I loved it and I bought it, so.
Okay.
I can rewatch it a lot.
You getting the balls out?
For me, yes.
Okay.
Well, if we're doing
we need a middle ground,
I think it was also the
ball Z.
Yes.
So balls out, ball Z, or ballless.
I wasn't expecting much, and I got a lot more than I expected.
That's
so
true.
Then I hyped it for him,
yeah.
Which didn't help him probably.
You probably hyped it a little too much for
right,
me, but it
right.
still was much better than I think.
Well, I just find it odd. Like I'm just a little perplexed that it's a Disney movie where you don't care about the characters. That's normally Disney's thing is getting you to, you know, tug at the heartstrings, care about the characters type deal. I mean, we all saw Toy Story 3 now.
Actually, I haven't.
You haven't seen Toy Story 3?
No, I haven't seen Toy Story 3 now.
Jeez, what are you doing?
Yeah. Well, Rachel doesn't like animated movies, so unless I drag her to them, she doesn't see them.
What?
And
I've never been following the series, so that's
yeah.
Why
Toy
I
Story. I mean, I've seen Toy Story and Toy Story 2, but I've only seen each one once, and that I don't have an affinity to those characters in a particular way. So that when they made Toy Story 3, everyone else was like, "I've been waiting for this forever," and me, I was like, "Why did you make a third one?" I mean, okay,
I'm in the same boat as you were, and I was choking up at the end of that movie.
I mean,
and I, you know
I'll
what? I did, actually, I don't think I ever even saw the second movie. I think I only saw the first one because. Half the stuff, they referenced some stuff from one of the movies that I didn't even remember, and it didn't even matter. It was so good.
I mean,
good.
I'll see it eventually.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, I'm not boycotting
it. I'm not boycotting it. It just wasn't a priority film
for
me.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's just fantastic.
I mean, clearly it wasn't a priority film for me because I've seen The Happening and and Sorcerer's Apprentice before it. So
you're talking about seeing The Happening twice, and you haven't seen Toy Story 3.
Yeah,
what
there
the
you
hell?
Go. And the next movie coming in my Netflix is Out for Justice, Steven Seagal.
Yeah.
So we're selling a 4-pack of Seagal movies, and I'm picking it up just for you, by the way.
Thank
we just
you.
Got it in. So.
All right.
Well, I'm not picking it up for you because you probably already own the movies. I'm picking it up
know.
So I will watch them.
The only Seagal movie I actually own is Under Siege 2.
Oh, well, then I'll pick up an extra copy. It's $5.
That's the best Seagal movie.
I'll ship it out to you.
In my opinion. No, because ever since I read Seagalogy, I've just been going through the Seagal movies, really enjoing them.
Machete's out on DVD now. Another excellent Seagal film.
Did we talk about Machete on the podcast? I think we did.
Yes.
We did
I saw it.
Yeah. And it's got a great beginning and a pretty good end, but everything in the middle is hit and miss. That's where
top notch Seagal, though.
Top notch Seagal.
Well, he's very
Machete.
Little Seagal, but that's
but
that's where it's
good.
Best.
Yeah.
Nowadays, that's where it's best. It's
yeah.
just a taste.
Yep. A little sprinkling of Seagal. All right, so we're running out of time.
I think we're going to go a little later.
We're
having a good time. Let's get into music, see where it goes. I'm not going
to
be restricted.
Okay, we're going to talk about Ricky Gervais, the Golden Globes.
Oh, my God.
Straight fire.
Yes.
Straight fire amazingness.
Yes. Balls.
Who could? Because Amber's on her... Perez Hilton, TMZ, and it seemed like the only people who were bitching about Ricky Gervais was the celebrities.
Yes.
But, like, I just... This is what I also thought was kind of funny. Speaking of that, was you guys ever watched Tosh.0?
No,
I know of it.
I know
like,
of
I see,
it,
like,
but I've never
videos.
Watched.
Yeah,
yeah. Watch.
So a bunch of my coworkers were like, "Oh my god, new Tosh.0," and I was like, "Really? That show's that popular? Like, I know it was
on. Apparently very popular.
It looks like Talk Soup, but with internet videos, which has potential. And I actually saw some of it. I went and watched it the other day, and I went, guy's kind of funny. It kind of let me down. It was the season opener, and they did Anton Dobson. You know, the hide your kids, hide your wife.
Yeah.
Really?
Well, what they did was they had him, the actual guy, Anton Dobson, on the show, and he did a web redemption, I think is what they call it. Uh-huh. And he, I don't know, he went and took some class about rape prevention or something, and it was really, it lost me at that point, you know what I mean? Like, you're trying way too hard to try to work this in.
Lauren.
When the auto-tune guys did it much better.
Lauren, who we've had on the podcast before, friend Lauren, she's a big Tosh.0 fan. Mm-hmm. And she sent me a video where Josh Homme from Queens did a bit with the what in the butt guy, if you remember him, as a web redemption thing.
Who could forget?
Who could forget?
Song
that
stuck
guy
in my head all day.
All day. And I didn't really see the point of it. It felt kind of painful and forced, like you said. And if that's how that is, then that must be. But I never really liked this Daniel Tosh guy to begin with. I like Joel McHale on The Soup. That's the guy I like.
Yeah, what I was getting at, though, was they were talking about how he was, like, bashing a celebrity or something like that, and they couldn't believe that he said that. And I was like, oh, did you see Ricky Gervais? And they were like, no. And I was like, oh, get this. You know what I mean? I'm like, if you think that was fucking funny, like, check this out. He, when Bruce Willis came out, he said it was Ashton Kutcher's father, and they were kind of like, meh. Like, they just, like, blew it off, and I'm sitting there going, how do you not think? He said that to Bruce Willis's face. Yes. He was in Die Hard. You don't say that to the man.
Well, and then also he made jokes about John Travolta and Nick and Tom Cruise being gay.
Oh, yeah.
He made jokes about, he pantomimed Hugh Hefner's girlfriend blowing him and gagging and checking her watch.
Yes.
And that was super funny, but then when they cut to De Niro dying laughing at it, that made it even better.
And then ripping on the president.
Something about his dentures being put back in after a blowjob or something like that.
No, he still said we had to put his teeth in and help him off the toilet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was the damn president.
So he's introducing him, and when the guy came out, he was noticeably pissed.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then his comeback line was like, when you want us to consider your movies, Ricky, have someone else consider them. Zing!
Yeah.
Well played, old man.
Yep.
But I just, you know, and as you guys were saying, that it's everything that was being said on the internet is being said, you know, to their faces. And that's why I thought it was brilliant. I didn't think he was over the line on anything. I think it was hilarious. And
no, I don't know. If I was a super rich actor and somebody went on and was like, Lauren, you've made so many bad movies, I'd be like, yep, that's me with the big huge house and all those bad movies. Trust me, Johnny Depp ain't mad that he's making fun of the tourists.
Yeah.
No, Johnny Depp isn't mad. Johnny Depp's like, that's right, the tourists helped me put a down payment on my island.
Yeah, I'm just gonna go cry in my Bentley now.
Exactly.
But yeah, Ricky, it was just really fun. If you get a chance to watch those clips, Ricky Gervais was just fantastic. I just only wish that Ricky Gervais could do a really good movie. I still have not seen a really good movie from
him.
They're
close, but now if you've seen his new stand-up special, which is I think just Out of England 2, Rachel and I saw it on HBO. It's murder. It's insanely good.
God, one more thing I wanted to ask you guys about. I don't know if you know any more information. I know we're going real over here, but The Office, the American Office, speaking of Ricky Gervais, I hear Steve Carell's not even going to be on, like, the final episode and stuff like that.
His character's leaving, and I guess he's leaving before the finale.
Huh.
So
I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, he'll be leaving before the finale.
Is that show just kind of shoo?
See, it's so funny. We were talking about this last night. I still think it's, until I watch it and think this is, you know, resolutely not funny. I am not enjoying it, and I'm very uncomfortable and not enjoying myself watching it. I will stop watching it.
I took what you said into account, and I still watch it, right? And I still was watching it and laughing at it. But I remember watching, like, the first two seasons of The Office, and I would be, like, moving in my chair going, like, oh, my God, I can't believe, you know, he's doing that. Like, Michael Scott, like, I was going apeshit over it. Now it's just a comedy show.
Well, yeah. We were talking about this. The first two seasons are modeled very heavily on the British Office.
And it's
heavy and awkward humor.
Oh, just so many douche chills. I've never had that many douche chills in my life watching those first two seasons.
But now it's much more madcap, and also it's become more Americanized because everyone has a redeeming factor. Mm. Michael Scott is a good salesman. Everybody has a use. Everybody's good at something. That was not the case in the British Office.
No.
Because the British Office was much more realistic in that some people are worthless.
Yeah.
Real talk. Sorry. I want to talk real quick before we go.
Music.
Coachella.
Okay.
It's been announced. I read the list at 1 o'clock in the morning, skimming the list. I see the Strokes. I see Kanye. And then I read Death from Above 1979, and my brain broke because it didn't make any sense. I said, "What? Death from Above? They broke? Wait. Oh, my God." Losing my mind. And then about 15 minutes after that, Jesse, who was the bassist in Death from Above, posts on his Twitter, "Yes, it's real." So then everybody gets really excited. So then the speculation around my house, which is basically me talking at Rachel as she does important things like try to be a doctor. And I say, do you think it's going to be a continued thing? Do you think they're going to tour? Are they going to make an album? I don't know, baby. I don't know. Thursday,
right.
Sebastian posts on his Twitter in all caps, "Death from Above 1979. There, I said it. And I turn to Rachel and I go, "I think it's going to be a one-off." Because clearly they're paying them a lot of money. It's the only reason. Because Rachel and I saw Sebastian Granger in concert last year before. And dude was a dick. And clearly they offered them a lot of money to get back together. There was a rumor that Jesse has been saying on Mastercraft message boards that they will do more after this. But I'll believe it when I see it. Until that time, I am doubtful.
Oh, sorry. There is technical difficulties, which is why there's not a whole lot of 1979 talk going on here. It's corrected now. So.
Okay, there we go. But will there be more? I'd like it. Certainly, the dynamic between the two of them was what made it good.
I just want to see YouTube videos of them fighting on stage. That would be great.
They do release DVDs, don't they? Past Coachella's, or am I thinking of something else?
I think you're thinking of something else. I don't think there's any DVDs of Coachella. I know that they stream some performances, so fingers crossed.
But they'll definitely be YouTube.
They'll be YouTube. Yeah, yeah. We were living off the Daft Punk YouTubes and leaks of their Coachella performance from what, 06?
Yep.
So so certainly there'll be video.
Did you cut me a CD of that, by the way, or is that Lauren? Yeah.
We all had copies of it.
Okay.
I don't know if it's Lauren or me.
Because my copy is gone, and I got like three other people who are like, "Dude, you got that Daft Punk bootleg?"
Lauren,
and I'm like, "I can't find it."
Lauren still has it.
Okay, because I need that back.
She'll get you a copy.
Yeah.
Because I have the one they released, the
Alive
2007.
Oh, they did an official?
They did an official one. It's the same, just with better sound quality.
Right.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The only thing is that you have to get the deluxe version to get the full set.
Yeah.
And I lucked out and happened to call Borders and say, "Do you have it? Okay, hold it for me." And I got the last one because it's completely out of print now.
Hmm.
And basically, it's two discs. The first disc is like the whole thing, and then the second disc.
I guess
like
I'll go to Torrent.
The
sorry,
last track.
Yeah,
sorry,
yeah.
Record time.
Yeah, once again. That is my most anticipated is what goes down with Death from Above at Coachella and beyond. That'll be the story of 2011 for me. What?
Yeah, did they dick out on the set list and not play good songs just because they're, you know, Sebastian's like, "Oh, we'll play that," you know? I'm very curious to see what they're going to do because there's a lot of animosity out here.
Yeah, they didn't. Yeah, they didn't end on good terms. And also, having met Jesse and having met Sebastian, Jesse's the cool one, and Sebastian just has got a chip. He's got a chip on that shoulder, baby. So I guess that's it for this one.
Yeah.
But we had a good one. We now have an official rating system of ballless, balls out, and then what's our middle one?
I was saying ballsy.
Ballsy, yeah.
But that sounds too much praise. That doesn't sound very middle ground.
Ball-ish.
Hey, ball-ish. I don't know. If something is ballish, maybe we should just stick with the, you know, the Ebert, you know, hot and
either
cold
thumbs up or thumbs down. You know. Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
You know, and then if people want to know the nuance, they really have to listen to the podcast and really listen to what we have to say about it.
There we
go. While McCarty is obviously balls out and I am ballless on Sorcerer's Apprentice, I still enjoyed a lot of Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Right.
There is coloring in between the lines, people.
Yeah, that's why. That's why we're here, to give you
nuance.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Coloring.
Yep. And genitalia references. So there we go.
So many. Yeah. So.
Anyways, I'm Fritz.
I'm Lauren.
And I'm McCarty.
All right, you guys have a good one. We'll catch you soon.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ricky Gervais.
Hello and welcome to the 67th Annual Golden Globe Awards, live from Los Angeles. I'm Ricky Gervais. On a serious note, just looking at all the faces here reminds me of some of the great work that's been done this year by cosmetic surgeons. you all look great. It is an honour to be here in a room full of what I consider to be the most important people on the planet. Actors. They're just better than ordinary people, aren't they? We all know that. Imagine a world without actors. Oh, God, it doesn't bear thinking about. Imagine if they ever went on strike. Oh, what would we do? You couldn't replace them. You couldn't replace them with any other profession, lawyers or doctors. I'd love to see a real anti-terrorist agent try and defuse a bomb in a busy train station in 1 hour. Some of those scenes, by the way, where Kiefer grabs someone and beats them to a pulp, they weren't even in the script. The director just said, keep rolling, we'll work it into them. But actors aren't just loved here in Hollywood, they are loved the world over, because they're recognisable. You can be anywhere. You could be in the third world, okay, and you get a glimpse of a Hollywood star, and it makes you feel better, okay? You could be a little child, a little Asian child with no possessions and no money, but you see a picture of Angelina Jolie and you think, oh, mummy. Let's get on with it before NBC replaced me with Jay Leno. The next category contains a couple of legends, one of which we've already seen, Sir Paul McCartney, fellow Brit, so good luck to him. I shouldn't be biased, but we actually came over on the same flight. I didn't get to speak to him because I was up the front in first class and he was behind me in coach. saving money. He spent an awful lot last year. I don't think we have to feel too sorry for him. He's doing all right. Oh, my thing. The serious bit now. The Golden Globes is shown all over the world. It is oblivious to colour or creed. It doesn't just celebrate talent, it celebrates difference. It crushes prejudice and stereotype. One stereotype I hate is that all Irishmen are just drunk, sweary hellraisers. Please welcome Colin Farrell.